The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
So we're going to start today's podcast off. Charms, conspiracy theories, and more.
It's not really a conspiracy theory.
Well, it
dragons,
is a little bit.
Dragons exist.
Dragons are real?
Yeah. Not now, once upon a time.
Yeah,
well, why are the lions, like, in London? Like, statues and monuments of lions. There weren't lions in London.
No, but people are artistic and creative and liked bringing their traditions to new places and setting landmarks and saying, this is ours, right?
Yeah, but lions, I mean, like, lions is a big thing with Britain, right? Monuments. It's as if we're just stealing a better animal. We had badgers. That's not cool.
You did steal a better... You guys were the imperialists. You steal everything.
Right.
What are we talking about?
Because we had otters and badgers. And hedgehogs, and they're not cool. So let's get a lion. Let's nick that. And that's our emblem, our logo, our, you know, using all our branding now. Lions.
Looks better than a hedgehog.
It does. More intimidating for sure. Right?
Well, I was also thinking
England football kit, three lions. Why?
Yeah. Well, Charms, think about why all of a sudden what are you supposed to have up there? Like a king with really bad teeth? I mean, like, think about there was that old king who was all kind of decrepit, and he lived for like till he was 19 or 20, and he was a sadist,
You're thinking of King Richard, I think, aren't you?
Is that who it is?
He had like a spinal issue.
Yes.
So he was pretty messed up, but just not a good guy.
He internalized a lot. He had mental health issues.
Yeah. It's amazing that they've turned out so well since then.
That's right.
That lineage, the royal lineage. I mean, Canada, right? We celebrate the moose. Fair enough. We got moose. I don't know why we don't celebrate the grizzly bear more. Wicked animal. Better than a leaf.
Grizzly bear is pretty phenomenal. As far as predator, apex predator, right?
Apex predator. One of the greats. You have a cage match. I'm putting my money probably on the grizzly bear over most animals, I think. Aren't you?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. A grizzly against a lion.
Yeah. I bet it's been tried somewhere. Some rich asshole has tried that.
And then they ate whatever animal died.
Yeah. And then killed the other one and ate that as well.
That's right. And ate that too.
Yeah.
No evidence.
Hey, we have Dax McCarty on later on today's show. We'll ask Dax who would win a fight between a grizzly bear and a lion.
Yes.
The two great apex predators. Although I'm sure there's others out there that will be corrected upon. The shark. But you can't really put a shark in a cage.
No.
Put a great white in a cage with a grizzly bear. I'm taking the grizzly bear. But yeah, maybe we'll ask Dax about that. And when Jimmy and Dubs show up, and JC, as JC's working today, isn't he? His real job.
So are Dubs, and Dubs is on her way. She can't make it, remember? She sent an email earlier.
Oh, did she? I didn't see that. Okay.
Yeah, and Jimmy just said he's at training for something else. I guess he's training to be a podcaster.
There should be courses on how to podcast, actually.
Yes, there should
they probably be. Are actually. I'm sure there are. There are. I'm sure the College of Sports Media probably does something like that. And they should.
Well, JC wants to start that as our new business, Footy Prime. FP Media Inc. celebrates the podcast with podcasting 101.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you start that? Like, what are we doing? Like hosting or analyzing or what?
No, you talk about all the different steps to producing a podcast, to making sure it's consistent. As we know, the most important thing about podcasting is putting a group of people together so you can be consistent. Mm-hmm. Everyone else wants to say, oh, it's this. Those podcasts where it's only one person, I think those are set up to fail because it's exhausting, right?
Yeah, you need more than one voice, I think. At least,
yes.
At least to you know, every now and again to jump in with an opinion to feed that conversation.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. No one's that interesting, right?
Oh, fuck no. Well, not us.
We're definitely not.
Look at Although we keep finding new things about each other, right? Like last year or a year and a half ago, it was the big reveal that Boy George hit on Craig, right?
Right.
Yeah. You and I were able to do 2,000 push-ups for Canadian Mental Health Associations mm-hmm. for the push-up challenge. Who knew we had so much in us?
I know. Are you still doing it? You still post?
I'm starting. So I today is my first, you know, I took a week or 5 days off from when it finished, and I'm mm-hmm. starting the kind of their approach again, another 28 days or 23 days or whatever it is.
Okay.
Do you notice a difference in your body?
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I got a little tricep line now again. I can do push-ups so easily. Like I can pop off 30 push-ups in a row, like as a set really easily now. Where when I first started, I was, man, that's third day. I couldn't, I was like, okay, I've got to do modified push-ups for a while.
Keep that quiet. Keep that quiet. You should be ashamed.
Cheater.
I call them junior push-ups. No, they're still 1.0. They're still good.
Well, listen, we're getting together tomorrow. Let's compare our pecs.
Yes. I like that. I like being compared to you.
Yeah. I bet you do. Well, I feel pretty good about myself.
Yeah, looking pretty good.
It's like JC always says, there's a reason why the three former athletes hang out with three schlubs. Yeah, JC, exactly. Yourself, and I.
Make us feel good.
So during the challenge last month, I kind of didn't do my regular workouts. So I went back to it yesterday, which involved a lot of squats. And my God, my legs are killing me now. So as great as push-ups are, and they are, they're brilliant, you got to do squats as well. You do squats and push-ups, that's your workout, really. That's a great, great start. They're the two best exercises.
Cardiovascular.
Comes in handy as well. Go for a walk.
Lumps.
Got to do a lot of cardio for that, I think. Jesus.
Yeah, a lot of cardio.
So I thought Dubs was on today, so I thought she'd be breaking down the Canada-USA game for us.
I'll do that.
But okay, you do it. But listen, it was a 1-0 loss.
Yeah.
Team that made several changes. I think there were six changes, weren't there, to Casey Stoney's 11. And there was some illness going through the team. But 1-0 against arguably the best team in the world. I think that's okay. It was a decent performance. Better than we saw last year from Canada.
Second best team in the world.
According to the rankings, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, up there. Anyway.
A U.S. women's team is sensational. They've got so many weapons. And it would take a David-esque performance, not the Goliath performance, but a David-esque, that lucky goal. And then park the bus for the rest of the time, because those two sisters were brilliant. Trinity Rodman, their team is just jacked, like athletes, not just soccer players. Athletes across the board. Speed kills. And that team, very, very impressive. That being said, Canada held its own. We did well. And I think that was a pretty great performance, considering.
I'd agree.
Go ahead, Craig. Sorry.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The Americans have, you know, they've got a system down there that pretty hard to beat worldwide. But other countries are catching up, which is good. The competition is getting better and better. And it's not a bad result for the Canadian team. Could have been worse.
What I like about the She Believes Cup is that I know it's a friendly tournament, but it feels more than just a friendly tournament, because you have the States and Canada in their two rivals. You have Colombia, a pretty good team. And then you've got this Argentine team, which Dubs has spoken about, who are just nasty. They're dirty. And that's going to be a real contest next up for Canada. Dubs is back in town for that one, I believe, on One Soccer. She's joining us tomorrow as well, in person, for some pod recording and some beers. So yes. We'll break down that game next week thoroughly with Dubs.
And that's one place I can still beat Dubs, which I'm very proud of.
Drinking beer.
Yes, as we know.
Yep. Yeah, she does well, though. I'll tell you what. He's a very, very solid drinker.
She is.
She is. Like, for someone her size, she can pull back the Guinness pretty well. Give her a lot of credit for that. So, I want to... Dax will be joining us real, real shortly, but the Premier League midweek games as well. Liverpool lost to Wolves. Jesus Christ. Like, Everton's up to eighth right now. They won. They're eyeballing Liverpool right now in the table. They're so inconsistent. Chelsea beat Villa. I mean, I don't know, Craig. Is it a good season? Or is it one of those kind of weird, unpredictable seasons where your Arsenal are the best team, I think it's fair to say. City dropped more points again. Arsenal are the best team. But behind Arsenal, there's a whole load of bang average teams.
Well, it all depends on who you're supporting. If it was Liverpool at the top, I know what you'd be saying. Oh, it's the best season ever.
Well, I loved you. I said that. It wasn't a great season, but I loved it. It was amazing because
exactly.
But it wasn't a great season.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a big day, a turning point yesterday, potentially. That was a good result for Arsenal, obviously, in a tough game. A lot of criticism toward the way they're playing. They're playing, you know, delay tactics. It's ugly at times, but they're getting it done. And it's something that Arsenal have missed for years and years, was that grinding out of results. We've seen the last two games not playing particularly brilliant football, but managing to get results. And then City losing drawing against Forest then puts them, 7 points behind with a game in hand. So there's a bit of breathing room there now for Arsenal. So big day for that club. Big day for Forest picking up a point was important. Huge. And then West Ham also picking up 3 points at Fulham, come tied on points now with Nottingham Forest. And Spurs, they're not out of trouble yet either.
Is it? Four points separating West Ham, Tottenham, Forest, and Leeds, I think.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty good. But I love, as I've spoken about before, the fact that you might not look at the top of the table right now because, hey, Arsenal, we think Arsenal might have wrapped it up with yesterday's performance. But all of a sudden, Europe, Brentford is in seventh, so go Bees. But that relegation is tremendously appealing, especially after finding out, like we talked about, the Spurs not having that kind of glorious history that there's reverence around them, right? Here's an opportunity.
Wonga, Spurs are a point safe right now. Now they're playing Palace.
They are.
A point up in West Ham.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, they can't get results in the Premier League. And if you go up the schedule, you see their wins are in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like nuts.
It's crazy. It's going to go down to the wire. And it really is exciting. Much like last year, the relegation fight outside the bottom two teams. It's going to go right down there. And there's some big teams, like all these teams, Forest, West Ham, Spurs. I know Leeds are a promotion club, but they're a big club. Palace, they're all big clubs. One of them's going down, right? Because you see Burnley and Wolves are going down regardless, even though Wolves, my God, thinking basement dwellers beat Liverpool. What is, anyway, one, I won't. We've got a guest. Let's bring Dax on, shall we? Dax of Apple TV,
he's MLS. In there.
Hey, Dax, how you doing?
What's up, fellas? All good? How are you guys?
Good.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
There's a lot of whining around football right now about time wasting. We're hearing a lot of it in the Premier League right now. We know FIFA have new rules coming out as well. You know, they've passed. Is time wasting a bigger problem now, do you think, than it ever has been in football?
Man, it was one of my biggest frustrations as a player. It was mind-numbing. But to be honest, it's gamesmanship, right? And it is part of the game. I'm in favor of rules that aren't over the top, that help usher in that era of maybe speeding up the game. And so when you do all these, you know, all these research firms, they do all the numbers on, okay, how much is the ball in play versus not in play? It's actually quite staggering that there's about, you know, 25, 30 minutes of a soccer game that it's the ball is actually not even in play at all. And so, you know, that for me is an issue. And so as a player, when you're winning a game, you want to take advantage of that. And it was, I think, the perfect example yesterday, David Raya against Brighton, you know, Hertzler comes out, the Brighton head coach, and comes out and he's like, how many times is Raya going to go down with an injury? And this isn't exclusive to the Premier League. In MLS, Orlando City's goalkeeper the last couple of years, Pedro Gallese, he would do the same thing, and it would frustrate me to no end. But it's clever. I'm all for it. MLS Next Pro has been implementing new rules that speed the game up, and it has been extremely effective in speeding the game up. It's obviously been adopted by FIFA, being introduced in the World Cup. So if you ask me, I'm all for it. We need to get the game quicker. We need to eliminate some of the gamesmanship that these teams do.
During the World Cup qualifiers, Canadian goalkeeper Milan Borjan was doing that on a regular basis, just about every single game. He would go down with something. He'd be like, oh, his career is over.
It's
over. His ankle was a mess. Every game.
Goalkeepers, man, you can't trust them. You can never trust a goalkeeper. You can't trust a goalkeeper, and they're always protected, overly protected. And so when they go down, it's like, hey, man, come on, let's go. Yeah. Get up. And by the way, they can't go off the field because the goalkeeper has to stay on the field at all times. And so it's clever. But I would like to see Hertzler, it comes off a little bit like sour grapes because Arsenal, they're entitled to win the Premier League or try to win the Premier League how they want to. But I don't disagree with him. The fact that a goalkeeper goes down three separate times for treatment and you can't sub him and he doesn't have to go, it's getting to the point where it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, they're adding a lot of extra time on, more so than we've ever seen before. Do you think that's enough to combat that type of thing?
It combats it in a logical sense of, yes, that's this, you're getting that time back, but it breaks up. It's just frustrating. If a team is on top of you and the goalkeeper knows, I just have to go down for a minute, get treatment, let us take a breath, let the coach get in some tactical instructions to my team, I'm going to be able to breathe. It slows the game down, and it actually helps the team that wants to provide the gamesmanship and that's not on the ball, or the team that's winning. And so, no, I mean, the stoppage time stuff, sure, logically, it gives the team the same amount of time they would have to try to get back in the game, but you're breaking up the rhythm. I don't like it. And so I'm all for trying to speed the game up.
Yeah, on one hand, they have these new rules coming in, 5-second throw-ins, 5-second for a goal kick. They want to speed the game up, but then they bring in more VAR and more VAR and more VAR, and that's going to break it up and slow it down. So I'm not sure where the confusion.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you police it. I'm really not, because it's really difficult to say, as soon as the ball goes out of bounds, there's 5 seconds. Well, what if the ball boy or ball girl or ball kid doesn't get the ball back into you quickly enough? Or, what if there's so many different scenarios where that's going to be hard to police. I'm not tasked with making these new rules. Maybe I need to have a think about what they should do.
Yeah, I think the media always has the right answers, personally.
Always.
Always. Always. You're part of us.
We're never wrong. I've never been wrong in my analyst career. I've never. My preseason predictions are always perfect. I've never been wrong.
Yeah. Us too. That's amazing, isn't it? Okay, so this is the games at hand. I want to talk about the DP situation right now a little bit, because obviously since Messi's arrived and Miami's done what they've done, we're all focused on that, on what's happened. But behind there's some really good players the last couple of years have come into this league at that level. And the guy I want to talk about is Anders Dreyer, in particular at San Diego, who's the second fastest ever to 20 goals and 20 assists behind, obviously, Lionel Messi.
Sure.
But because of Messi and that enormous shadow that little fella casts, I don't think the world is really appreciating just yet what this guy's done so far for San Diego.
He's fantastic. First of all, San Diego is, bar none, my favorite team to watch in Major League Soccer. And it's ironic that I sit here 14 months later after my original prediction of them finishing last in the West last year, and they are my favorite team to watch. It was impossible to know what you were going to get out of a first-year head coach and Mikey Veras, out of a team that was kind of just thrown together pretty last minute. But I think general manager Tyler Heaps deserves a ton of credit for how methodical they were about their vision and going to get players that aligned with that vision, even if it wasn't flashy. And the flashy signing, of course, was Irving Lozano, Chucky Lozano, and that hasn't worked out. And yet, how often can we say, when a designated player signing doesn't work out, the team completely folds? I think Toronto FC is the perfect example of Insigne, Bernadeschi, and the whole team crumbles around it because the infrastructure is not right. Well, the infrastructure in San Diego is perfect. So when that doesn't work out with Lozano, the team still ticks. And part of that reason, a massive part of that reason, is Anders Dreyer has been the best player, second best player in Major League Soccer for the last 13-14 months. And if it wasn't for Lionel Messi and the historic seasons that he continues to have, we would be talking about Anders Dreyer as the 2025 MVP of Major League Soccer and potentially leading San Diego to some of their first trophies and silverware, because that's how good I think San Diego can be. Dreyer, he's the perfect designated player signing. He's in his prime. He plays every game. He's always fit. And he is an absolute killer in the final third. And I love that he makes the right decision almost every time. He's a guy who can make a final pass, but he's also clinical in the box, as we've seen to start the 2026 season. So we've spoken to him on MLS Countdown, on MLS 360, in post-game interviews numerous times. He's got a really balanced head on his shoulders. He's incredibly humble. He loves the MLS. He loves Major League Soccer and living in the United States. You can just see a perfect match made in heaven. And that's why you have to give San Diego's front office credit. They identified him as a player who would be a game changer. And he's not a big name, but he's everything you want in a designated player. He's going to represent the club and the community well, and he's going to do the business on the field.
And speaking of designated players, Dax, obviously Toronto FC have had some success in the past and also some big failures. What do you think of Josh Sargent? And is there a guarantee that he's going to do well in MLS, or is that still a bit of a risk?
Yeah, I don't think it's a risk. And I was asked this question yesterday, and this is how I would phrase it. He is going to be successful signing. I think Josh Sargent is going to be tremendous in Major League Soccer. Now, did Toronto FC overpay for Josh Sargent? Yes, they did overpay for him. But that is the going rate for a top quality striker who is a proven goal scorer, who's an American international in his prime. I liken this signing a lot to when Toronto FC made a big swing for Josie and brought Josie back to Major League Soccer. It's not going to be cheap. You get a player that doesn't require an international slot. You get a player that is motivated to do well and motivated to be in Toronto, because the whole saga with Norwich City was, well, he only wants to go to Toronto. So I want to let's make that happen from his camp. And you get a guy who, for me, is a goal scorer in every sense of the word. He can score with both feet. He can score with his head. He's got great movement in the box. He's pacey. He's not slow. And his holdup play and his general play, he's got really soft feet for a striker. He will be a great signing. Now, $27 million, you would think, okay, he needs to score 25, 30 goals a year. I don't see that for him. The most goals he's ever scored in a season is 16. But there is pressure. There's pressure on him to do well. I believe he's going to be right in that 15 to 20, 22 goal range. I think for that cost, in that eclipsing that 20 goal range. That is my expectation for him. And it's not just on him. It's going to be on Georgi Mihailovic, and it's going to be on Corbino, and it's going to be on Cifuentes to be able to provide him opportunities and chances. And Robin Fraser, ultimately, he has a much better team than he did last year. So this is a big swing from Toronto FC. I believe it was the right swing to make. And now it's about Robin Fraser getting the tactics right and helping these players gel and put a better product on the field than we've seen, because their first two games were a little disappointing.
I was wondering, because we're talking TFC, and I know people out there listening will go, oh no, they're talking about TFC again. but he's coming in, Josh Sargent's coming in fit mid-season. Will that make a difference as kind of MLS players are still rounding up? Does he have an advantage?
I would say that it's pretty negligible, honestly. Okay. Wonger. Can I call you Wonger?
Oh, please. Now we're ready to go. We're going to smoke a cigarette after that.
I love it. Let's have a beer after this. I would say it's pretty negligible, because while you could make the argument, yes, Josh Sargent is fit because he's in the middle of his season, he hasn't played real football. He hasn't played in a game in a month, however long it's been, a month, month and a half. And so I'd argue that fitness is different than sharpness and game fitness and game tactically being sharp in your mind and in your legs. And so I don't think Josh Sargent is going to just walk into the starting 11 and be 90 minutes fit. I think Robin Fraser has to be smart about how he builds him back up again, because even then Josh Sargent was training with the reserves, I believe. So it's a slower pace. Training isn't as intense. And so he's going to need some time. And I would say he's probably right around the same level as a bunch of Major League Soccer players right now in terms of game fitness. but he's a great player. And I think the championship in England is extremely similar to how MLS is played. Really transitional, up and down game, physical. And so it's played at a fast pace. So he'll be used to that. It's not going to be a surprise to him. It won't be a shock to him. It just depends on how quickly he gets up to speed with his game fitness and then obviously gelling and interacting with all the good players that they have around him.
Do you think he can get back in the U.S. national team conversation for the World Cup?
I think he's still in the conversation for the World Cup, but he's going to need to start scoring goals, and he's going to need to start scoring goals quickly. And the problem for Josh Sargent is that Mauricio Pochettino has seen him. He's given him chances, and Josh Sargent, quite frankly, has not lived up to the billing in a U.S. jersey. And now, whether that's all his fault, that's up for debate. I don't believe that it's all his fault. I think that there are times where he's looked a little bit kind of a fish out of water tactically because he's not sure where to go, and it might be different than how he played at Norwich. But those excuses aren't going to help him when it comes to making a roster. When you put on that U.S. men's national team shirt, you need to score goals if you're the striker. So I would say he's probably fourth or fifth in the pecking order right now based on form. Haji Wright's playing fantastic. Balogun's playing very well. Ricardo Pepi, for me, is always a danger. He's always going to be in the conversation. So then he's kind of on the outside looking in. And so if he comes in and hits the ground running and he gets 7-8 goals really quickly with Toronto FC, I do believe Pochettino is going to give him a look in camp. It's just a matter of who Pochettino prefers and who's in the best form at the time.
From the wily veterans to this Red Bulls team and what's happening there right now and how Michael Bradley comes in, albeit two games, right? There's only so much you can read into two games, but he's blooding these kids, these teenagers. I think you were a teenager, weren't you, at Dallas, I think, when you started.
I was.
But you weren't 16 or 17, you were 19.
I was not.
That's quite a golf in football worlds. But some of these, Adri Mameti, for example, is just, you know, looking like a grizzled veteran out there at 17 years of age. Can this continue? Sure. Are we just like enjoying this kind of like, you know?
I called, it's amazing. I was on the call for week one down in Orlando City against Red Bull New York. And when we saw the 11s come out, I turned to my play-by-play and I said, this is a big risk for Michael Bradley. This could get ugly quickly. And boy, was I wrong. For the first time in my life, I've ever been wrong in my analyst career. And it's because we don't know what we don't know. We hadn't seen three teenagers on the field. And look, for all the MLS Next Pro aficionados out there, if you saw Red Bull 2 play and knew this was coming, then hats off to you. But we didn't know anything about these kids. And so before the game, I talked to Bradley Wright Phillips. I was like, hey, send me a voice note on some of these kids. And he was like, Dax, I'm telling you, these guys have quality. And he's like, they are not going to be overawed by the moment. They're not going to be afraid. And I thought, okay, let's see. Wow. Bradley Wright Phillips, bravo to you, my friend, because it's not just Mameti. It's Julian Hall. It's Matt Dos Santos. And there's a theme. Michael Bradley, he trusts those guys because he had them and he coached them to a championship in MLS Next Pro. And so for them to step on the field and be able to do what Michael Bradley wants tactically because they're technically good enough and Michael Bradley has created a rhythm around them to protect them. It's really impressive what's happening at Red Bull. And by the way, guys, it's not just the teenagers. It's 22-year-old Justin Shea. He's been my favorite center back in Major League Soccer through 2 weeks. Manu Dua, who is a center back for San Diego, and Justin Shea, they have been incredible. And it's not just without the ball, defending, they're doing all that. It's with the ball. They drive forward from center back into midfield. They make plays. It's just been a really, really interesting. It's interesting to me that Red Bull is on top of the East, San Diego is on top of the West, and they're doing it with so many young players. So full credit to Michael Bradley and Mikey Veras. But one thing I would say is that with young players, there are peaks and valleys. You're going to have great games like they've had the first 2 weeks, and then you're going to have moments where you're going to have to bring them out of the team because they lose confidence or they have a bad game. And that's where Michael Bradley needs to get the balance right, because Mameti right now looks like the second coming of Busquets. He's 16 years old. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be perfect. Red Bull and San Diego both started the season off with very favorable schedules. Once the schedule gets a little bit harder, then they will be really tested, and I believe they're going to pass those tests, but it's going to be a process. And so hats off to Michael Bradley for what he's done with that young Red Bull team. They look like they're absolutely going to have a say in the Eastern Conference.
I mean, listen, Michael Bradley, I imagine that even though it's his first gig as a Major League Soccer head coach, his voice carries weight.
Of course.
Kids too. I mean, as young as they are, they still remember Michael Bradley being the face of the U.S. national program,
yep.
which can only help him.
Yeah, that helps, of course. Michael Bradley, when Michael was 21 years old, anyone who was close to him or knew him knew he was going to be a coach. He grew up, it's in his DNA. It's in his blood. And so he's had a great mentor in Bob. And we spoke to Michael before the game. He said, look, I've taken a lot of things from my father, but I've also taken things from everywhere I've played. He played in Germany. He played in Holland. He played in England, right? He played everywhere. He played in Italy. So he has so many different experiences that he can call upon. And when he walks into a locker room, he commands respect right away. And that's what he said. He said he's used Choupo-Moting and Forsberg to be able to help him send his message down to the players. He wants to give players autonomy to be themselves. And the really impressive thing about him is that he just stays even keeled. I asked him, what are your goals for this year? And he just said, Dax, you're not going to like this answer. I'm sorry, but it's just, we're going to take it 1 week at a time for 34 weeks. He's like, mm-hmm. I can't do it any other way, because if I do, we're going to get too far ahead of ourselves. My team is too young to do it any other way. And so mm-hmm. it's the perfect coach speak answer. But when it comes from Michael, you just trust that that's actually what he believes. And that's mm-hmm. how they have to be successful. And so I've got no doubts that he's going to be a successful coach. I just wonder when the first storm hits, because they will go through a rough patch. How is he going to handle it? Is he still going mm-hmm. to rely on these young players to get him through that? But wow, what a great start to 2026 for Michael Bradley and Red Bull.
It's interesting you talk about the DNA of Michael Bradley and going to be a coach. Isn't it interesting that you do see players that you play with that have sure. that look or the ambition to take the game and sort of the tactical awareness and all these different things
yep.
at a different level that seems to suit them. I played with Michael Carrick at West Ham United, and he was a young lad at the time, but he didn't really seem to be the player that I would think that would have moved on into management, but he's done it very, very well. So obviously changed and matured and later years. But yeah, it's interesting to see that some guys that are just seem to be made for it.
Craig, isn't that interesting how the guys we're talking about are both deep-lying midfielders?
Right.
Something great there. Point. You know, a lot of people when I got older were like, hey, you're going to coach, right? And I was like, no, I actually want to have a life.
That's a good point. I was the same.
But guys like that, look, I love the game just as much as the next person. But Michael Bradley, like, he like lives the game. I don't think he turns his brain off. Like when I come home at night and I could hang out with my family, it's like, if there's a game on, maybe I'll watch it, maybe I won't. But Michael, he's like, there's a game on, I'm going to watch. Like that, he lives, eats, breathes soccer. And of course, he finds time for everything else, his family. But there's just something about being a coach and having that coaching DNA. Jesse Marsh, when I was at Red Bull, he asked me, I was probably 28, 29 years old at the time. And he said, do you want to be a coach? And I said, I was thinking about it. And he was like, you're 28, 29. I knew I wanted to be a coach when I was 23 years old. And I'm like, Jesse, that is not me. Maybe that is a sign that I do not want to be a coach. I think the best part about going into that profession is being able to use your knowledge to help younger players. I still get players I played with from around the league that reach out to me and that ask me for advice or just my thoughts on certain situations. And that's part of it where when you're a veteran, you've been around the game as long as guys like us have, you can give back to these younger kids. And I think it's a perfect microcosm of where MLS is today, that we're seeing so many young players on the field at 16, 17 years old, where we didn't see that. I joked on our Major League Journeyman podcast yesterday that...
Wait, you're on another podcast?
Well, it's my podcast. Hell? Come on now. The Journeyman, you know that. So it was funny, though. We were referencing all these young kids playing. I got drafted at 18 and I was at FC Dallas. I didn't have one defender on my team that got minutes that was under 30 years old. Not one. And maybe you can make the argument, Drew Moore might have been one and maybe Clarence Goodson. But at the end of the day, it was all experience. It was veterans. I look at some of these backlines and there are teenagers on backlines all over MLS. And so I didn't even make my MLS debut till I was 19 years old. And even then it was like sparring minutes here and there. It was not a lot. And so these 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds are being relied on to play heavy minutes and start most games because age is just a number. If you're ready, You are ready. And that's what I love about what the academy system has done for teams. I was playing in college at 17, 18 years old. That's not the same as playing in professional games against grown men in MLS Next Pro that these 15, 16, 17-year-olds get to do. That's where you see the development happen, and that's where you see a kid like Mamedi. He looks like he's going to be a U.S. national team star. Not to put too much pressure on him too early, but he has the quality at 16 already to be starting in Major League Soccer and looking comfortable and not out of place. Imagine what he's going to look like in 3 years.
You talk about the NCAA system, and you went through that. What are the differences? Because I know there is definitely a jump from the collegiate era, game and obviously the intensity of it. But what was the biggest thing for you to adjust to? Was it the intensity? Was it the day in, day out?
It's the day to day. The speed of play on the field is the first thing. The speed of play in college soccer is not the same as it is at the professional level. It's just a reality. But the day to day is just different. You're managing class, you're managing weight room sessions, you're managing different social activities, and the college season is too short. I know Sasha Sarovsky at Maryland has really been pushing for them to get more games in the college season because they just don't play nearly enough. How will you expect kids that play in college to have an easy transition to the pro level when in college you're playing 4 or 5 months out of the year and then you have to transition to double that at the professional level? 10, 8, 9, 10, 11 months. So there's just not, you just don't play enough. And so your body needs to go through an adjustment period. And there's all kinds of rules through with NCAA stuff. And so look, there's a lot of bureaucracy involved, stuff that I don't know enough about, stuff that's way over my head. But fundamentally, it's just about playing more. Kids need to play more and they need to have more reps and they need to build up that strength when they're younger.
Did the pressure for you come to leave school a little bit early? Did that come from Dallas or from you personally?
That come from me personally. I wanted to leave. I set my goals out and I knew what my path was going to be. And my path was never going to be a valedictorian at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Okay. If I maintained a 3.0 GPA, boom, I was buzzing. I got a 3.0 GPA dinner from UNC. And then I was like, all right, I need to get out of here to turn pro as quickly as I could, because I wanted to play in the under 20 World Cup for Thomas Rongen and the U.S. men's national team. I wanted to play at the Olympics for Peter Novak in the U.S. men's national team. So I turned pro earlier because I knew that college soccer was not going to get me ready to play at that level. And so I was pushing for it. And when agents started reaching out to me after my sophomore year, I thought, all right, this seems like the right time to go. Of course, my coach at UNC at the time, Elmar Bolovich, was like, you're not ready. He's a really strict German guy. And I just thought,
imagine a really strict German guy.
Yeah. I just thought, all right, Elmar, agree to disagree. I'm out. So there was no pressure from anyone else. It was just my parents said, you can go pro, but you have to promise us to finish school, that you're going to finish school. And here we are 22, 23 years later, and I still have yet to keep that promise. So I'm sorry.
I wanted to circle back. Sorry, Sharms. I wanted to circle back just to the players knowing they wanted to be coaches. For Craig and Dax, did you guys ever meet someone who you went, no way they're going to be a coach? I want to, like, there's got to, and they ended up being a great coach.
Yes.
Because that's interesting to me, that transition from, hey, I'm a player and I'm a zest for life and I don't want to be a coach. I don't stare at, and then all of a sudden they focus in, or there's a switch that goes off.
There was a guy for me where I was like, all right, this person will absolutely never ever touch being a coach. And that was another deep lying fantastic midfielder, Kyle Beckerman. I was like, this guy's going to go and live off the land. He's going to buy a ranch in the middle of the mountains in Salt Lake City or wherever. And he is literally going to have a cowboy hat. He's going to be like Brad Pitt in Legends of the Fall. He's just going to go off the grid. He will never be a coach. And then he retires and he gets a head coaching job at a university in the Salt Lake City area. I can't remember exactly which one, but I just thought, I can't, like, literally, that is like the biggest switch up that I've ever thought of. Kyle Beckerman did not think he wanted to be a coach. Obviously, deep lying midfielder. He probably had the chops for it, and he's doing really well, I believe. So that was the one for me.
Well, there aren't many coaches who once upon a time had dreadlocks.
True.
Right?
Not a lot of dreadlocked coaches out there.
No, Ruud Gullit, and I can't think of anyone else apart from Kyle Beckerman. That's a great point. I was going to ask you a question, and
it's gone from my mind now.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Wonga. Jesus Christ. it's not that important, obviously. It wasn't a great question. But no, listen, Dax, thanks so much, mate. This is really great chat. Enjoyed this.
Cheers,
we'll
guys.
Be back on again at some point.
Yeah, good to see you. Weekend games.
Anytime you guys want to have me back on, always a pleasure to chat football with anyone. So you guys do a great job. Keep it up.
Another question. Remember? Sorry. It's really important because before you came on today, we're talking a very important, pertinent question. Who would win a cage match between a grizzly bear and a lion? And I said, we'll ask Dax this question.
A grizzly bear and a lion.
I have to ask you.
I'm a big believer in weight class, and I believe a grizzly bear is just going to overpower a lion. I mean, they're both aggressive, dangerous, claws, teeth. I think the grizzly bear takes it, but he's going to have some scars. That's me.
He's a five-tool athlete, right? A five-tool athlete.
Sure is. Yeah. Sure is. Thanks, maybe, mate. A thicker coat too, thicker skin.
Yeah, good point, actually.
Great question, guys. Okay. All right. Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Dax.
Dax McCarty from Apple TV. Of course, you can watch all your MLS this season on Apple. There's no more MLS season pass. If you have Apple, you have access to all MLS coverage. It's fantastic.
And they're sharing numbers this year. Have you noticed?
Have they? I haven't seen that.
Well, yeah. The first, I think it was over 10 million for the first weekend.
Really?
Specifically, I would say because they've opened the door on the MLS paywall. So people, look, this is going back to, and we talk about it all the time, this is going back to pre-specialty channels, right? When this is a channel, just like everything else is for people in Canada, but it's like an ESPN, TSN, a Sportsnet. All of a sudden you go to that channel because it's out of habit. If you're going to Apple now, you're going to see a football game and you're going to go, hey, I didn't like Orlando City FC versus Miami on a Sunday. I was watching.
Like you're sitting there with the wife, and you want to watch episode 4 of Pluribus.
Yes,
and then before you wait a minute, Inter Miami's playing right now.
Yes, and then Tony says, the wife says, "Is there anything on?" And you're like, "No, nothing on."
No,
there's a soccer Pluribus. Game.
They haven't released this week's episode
That's
yet.
Right. You lie.
Good show, by the way.
Release is on Thursday nights at 8, Tony.
Yeah. By the way, Carl Beckerman is coaching at the Utah Valley Wolverines. That's where he is. That's great. That's interesting. Craig, I don't know why with Carrick coming to United, it never dawned on me that, of course, you played with him. I know you did at West Ham. You met a long time ago. I'm not sure how long your paths crossed before he moved to Spurs, right, I think, from West Ham.
5 years. I was with him.
Oh, 5 years. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but you was he a quiet guy? That's why you didn't see straight away the potential as a coach?
Yeah, and young. I mean, that whole group, Joe Cole, Rio Ferdinand, Glenn Johnson, Michael Carrick, Lampard.
Jesus.
Quite young. Yeah.
Did they think
and had an amazing youth team, too. They won the FA Youth Cup.
Should bloody hope so with that team.
Yeah. Gregor, did they think you were nuts at all? Because you used to have fun.
Maybe a little bit.
That's intimidating. Like, it's intimidating if you came to come on, like you're a young kid, you're playing with some guy who's 28 years old, all of a sudden you're 18, 19. You went through it, Craig.
Yeah. Yeah, went through the whole gamut, really, when you're the young kid looking at page 3 in the Sun newspaper and they're 4 years older than you.
Burp, burp, burp.
The next thing you know, you're like, hold on a minute, I'm 10 years older than them now.
Like,
we go through the whole gamut with young players, and you're that young player, and then you end up being the older player and then seeing the younger players come through. But yeah, the development system at West Ham at that time was phenomenal.
Tony Carr, wasn't it? Tony Carr ran
the
academy there. Yeah. So, I mean, if it just shows that what frustrates me about football and sport in general is that kind of story where the money talks. If West Ham could have kept those players, say there was a cap in the Premier League and you could retain those players, how many trophies would West Ham have won?
Yeah.
I would say they won a ton.
Oh, it's interesting. One Monday morning I came in and Tony Carr came out. We were doing some just warming up, doing our goalkeeping drills and whatever. And he's like, hey, Craig, I have a word with you. I was like, yeah, sure. He goes, we had a tournament here on the weekend, under 12s, players and teams from all over the world. Because we had a team from Canada. These kids were 11 years old. He says, I would have taken, if we could, and if they live locally, I would have taken 7 or 8 of those players. He goes, they were fantastic. For that age group, he says, they're like, so you look at that and, you know, obviously none of them did. And then where did they show up, go, and where do they develop? They come back to Canada and, you know, where do they go? Like, so, you know, developing at that age in Canada is a really difficult thing because of the best v best and trying to play against opposition that's going to increase and make you a better player and develop you. And I think that's where we sort of miss out. But if you had clubs that are basically like in England, like a, you know, a driver away from a club in every direction, you're going to get those opportunities that we don't have here. And geography is a big thing too.
God, that's so depressing. Tony Carr, one of the great, great youth coaches, development officers that English football's ever seen, saw a team of Canadians at 11 years of age and said, I would have taken 6 or 7 of them back in what year was this, Greg?
2000.
Oh, 2000, that late.
2000, yeah.
Jesus. I wonder what team that was.
I wonder if
I don't really know. I think they were a select team. I want to see a select team from British Columbia or something.
Anybody who listens to Footy Prime, if you were on that team, please reach out.
Around 2000, were you on a Canadian select team that played against a variety of American English clubs, including West Ham? Were you on that squad? And why the hell aren't you making millions of dollars right now as a professional?
Maybe they don't want to know because they might have missed
them. Maybe they don't,
But exactly. Craig, it's interesting because I don't know enough about England sports, but what's the other kind of main team sport? Would it be rugby? Like, what sports are people leaning into? You know how we always know, hey, Canada, soccer is the most played sport. But you're also competing with the other sports, right? It's not just, we're playing, you know, you're competing against football, you're competing against hockey, all of the other sports you're competing against. Is England just a soccer nation, or are they actually competing against football, like rugby? What other big sports are they competing against?
Well, rugby, cricket. I mean, it's a sporting nation for sure.
No, I understand that. I'm just always like, what would be second or third, or what's the pecking order?
Well, cricket's a summer sport, but that's massive. You're competing with rugby, but soccer's way bigger than rugby. Rugby's huge. But from an athlete standpoint, I mean, there's some great rugby players who would become great soccer players, I'm sure, but Craig, I think it's football's up here.
Yeah. So and it's a different, there's a class system there too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Whether we like it or not. Great and point. The educated are more likely to, and the wealthy are more likely to move into rugby, kind of like yourself. Yeah.
Well, it's true because I was neither smart, rich, or posh. I just couldn't play soccer. But I had friends who went to what they call grammar schools, right? Grammar school. So basically in England, when I was growing up, maybe it's changed now, I don't know. You had the regular stream. You go from your elementary school to your secondary school. I went to a comprehensive, which is just average, like over here. But then the smart kids, the really smart kids, would take what's called the 11 plus exam. Mm-hmm. If you pass that, you get into a grammar school, which is usually boys only or girls only. And that was the best of the best. And they only played rugby. Mm-hmm. They didn't play soccer. Cricket and rugby. Football was seen as for the scummers, whereas the comprehensive, you played both rugby and cricket and soccer.
My girlfriend, her dad was like Cambridge University lawyer, you know, like different level as far as what he would think is class and where I was. And he was like, yeah, he's not a bad lad for a footballer. You know, just put me right in my box, working class. Dad was a fireman.
Snobbery.
Oh yeah, a lot of that. I mean, honestly, it's sideways. I don't know how bad it is these days, and I think it still exists.
I wonder.
But even just trying to get into a golf course, they asked me what my father did. I'm like, what the fuck does that got to do with anything? I said he's a fireman. They thought I said farmer, so they were all like a landowner, right? Farmers, like they. Now all of a sudden I've jumped up. I was like, no. No, I said fireman. They're just like, ooh.
Oh, like just saves lives.
Yeah, just put a pin in it. Like, oh, he's a commoner. He's a commoner.
Oh, classic.
And he's a colonial. I used to get that all the time too.
Well, there's actually that book 16. I've mentioned before. I mentioned this book before, Soccernomics by Simon Cooper. Breaks down the numbers behind football around the world, but a big part is on England and how they actually achieve greater than they should because they're not choosing from the entire country, their talent pool. Because you have rugby and you have cricket and you have other sports, which are quite big. Whereas you go to Argentina or Brazil, or other countries, it's football. Everyone plays football. You've got this big pool. Whereas over there, it's so divided from the haves and have-nots, the rich and the poor, the blue collar and the white collar, that you're just choosing from that blue collar group, right? Which is funny because football used to be for the rich originally. That great show on, is it on Netflix? The Gentleman's Game. It breaks it down for you. And how football originally was for the rich and the educated, until the scumbags came in and ruined it for everyone.
It's always the scumbags.
Great show though. It's a great show. You should look in. You should watch it. It's quite educational. Yeah.
Well, I guess we could see some of the transition for Canada if we're going to make it a bit about our nation is just basketball and Vince Carter. There was a great documentary called the Vince Carter Effect, and literally all of these kids who watched the slam dunk contest in 2000 now are, you know, they were 8, 7, 6 years old. 20 years later, we've got the second most NBA players, right? So and back to what, I mean, Dub says it, if you can see it, you can be it. That hasn't happened for soccer in Canada yet, to be perfectly honest. If you can see it, you can be it. Just because soccer has been, football has been secondary, tertiary, going down the list as far as broadcast. And that's the difference, right? When you don't have a huge broadcast deal like the NBA does in Canada, you're not getting the eyeballs. And you lose out on the marketing tool of if you can see it, you can be it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, Alphonso Davies is a good example of that. Ooh. We got star player that, I mean, how many people in Canada have watched him play for Bayern Munich? You know,
very few.
Sure. How many people watch that when you're on one soccer?
I have no
idea. 7, 8 people?
We had the German rights. They don't go for an awful lot in Canada. We know that just Sportsnet, the only league that is worth paying an exceptional amount of money for is the Premier League in Canada.
Yeah, it is like Premier than everything else, right?
Everything.
It's that simple. But no, I mean, it's going to change. It's going to take time. Mm-hmm. We've discussed this a lot. I think that's why this World Cup is so important. We hear it all the time about the Women's World Cup when it was here in 20, what year was that? 2015? And how many of the current national team watched that tournament? And it really inspired them when they saw some of these stars of Canada on home soil. And there's no reason why this World Cup this summer can't do the same.
Yeah,
so that's
no, exactly. I think we have a ton of young men and women that have been inspired by our national teams and what they've done, our women's team at the Olympics. Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Thanks to Dax McCarty. A really, really fun chat that was. Thank you, everyone, for joining us so far this week. We'll be back tomorrow. We're shooting in person tomorrow. We're not sure when exactly or when it'll drop, maybe in the weekend. We'll see, because there will be some beers involved at some point.
Thank God.
Thank God, eh? You've been dry for a while, Wonga?
I've been dry for a while, but this weather, thank God we have some sunshine in Vancouver, finally.
We're not in Vancouver. Just before anyone gets like all excited, we're not in Vancouver. I wish we were in Vancouver. Not.
But I want to promote every Thursday. We'll be doing MLS content. So come here every Thursday to Footy Prime. We'll have either a Canadian Footy Prime content or contributor would be the word.
Contributor, yes. Yeah.
I was looking for that word. Or we've talked with the people from Apple, and people from MLS on Apple will be coming every second Thursday. So just come here for your MLS information.
They got a good stable of people there at Apple, I got to say.
They really do.
They do.
Yeah, they do. They do a good job.
And they're super helpful. They're honest. They support us, and we're happy to support them.
you watch their shows, and they're fun shows. As a TV guy and a host, I'd love to be involved, because I mean they're fun. Everyone's having a good time. They're knowledgeable, obviously, and it's not your typical talking head bullshit. They actually have opinions and their personality, which is refreshing to say the least. And listen, we're not being paid by Apple, just so everyone knows.
If we were, I'd even go heavier.
Yeah, definitely.
Damn right. That's the best you did last year, remember? Craig went on, this app is tremendous.
Yeah. Do you know they show all the games?
Yep.
Highlights. They got shows pre, post.
Yeah. Best app ever. I should be paid. Jeez, my God.
Yeah, no kidding, man. You need a cold shower now. Jesus. All right. Make sure you like us and retweet us and subscribe and leave us comments. There's a ton of great comments this week. We'll do a comment show. I'm thinking actually one of maybe tomorrow for our in-person, we'll do a comment show.
Oh, that works well. Yeah, great idea. Yeah.
Okay. All right, everyone. Thanks so much. Great. Wonger. Bex. Until next time. Cheers for listening.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. Check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.